Hey everyone, it's Michelle.
I'm Brayden.
And this is Spooky Shit. This week we are going to be sharing some creepypasta with you all.
Yeah, I'm going to start this week.
And then I will be picking up in between your little stories.
Warning, this episode may contain graphic details. Listener discretion is advised.
But yeah, how are you?
You fucking beat me to it. I was going to go, but how's it going? I'm good. I've just been streaming per usual. I think I'm definitely streaming at least 40 hours a week now. So it's like a full-time job without the pay, which is interesting. Damn. I'm having fun. I don't know if I mentioned last week, I have my cosplays almost completely ready for Comic-Con now. I feel like I might have, but I don't know if I mentioned both of them. I'm going to be Marin from My Dress Up Darling and also Yor from Spy Family. I'm excited. I have colored contacts on the way, pink contacts and red contacts. Damn. Oh, I did mention it because I need to pay you to come cut the hair on these fucking wigs for me. The bangs are my eyeballs.
You did. You did mention okay. It.
I'm going to hit you up on off stream about that. Off stream, she says. Off recording. Oh, my God.
I was like, oh, we're streaming?
Oh, we're streaming. Yeah, this is live. I didn't tell you.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I made us a Twitch channel like 2 years ago.
That would have been nice to know.
How fucked would that be? Just not even say anything. Just privately live. Oh, my God. Yeah, I need to hit you up about that. Because I could try to do it myself for sure, but if I fuck it up, that would suck. It just looked down my butt. But yeah, I'm excited about that. Comic-Con is in like 2 weeks. It should be really cool.
How exciting.
Yeah. And I think next week I'm going to do a subathon, which I've never done before. So subathons on Twitch, basically it's like the idea is people give you subs, which like they spend like $5. If you're an affiliate like me, you only get half that money, so I get $2.50. But every time people sub, you like add time to how long your stream's gonna be. And people have done them like with no cap on them and gone for like, I think that people have gone for weeks just not ending their stream. They like sleep in the middle of it. Sometimes they sleep on stream, just like set it up facing their bed. I would not do that if I didn't uncapped. I'd be like, all right, we're gonna be on a back page for 8 hours now. But yeah, I mean, mine's obviously not going to go that fucking hard because I'm not like getting thousands of viewers every stream. But I think I'm going to set like a cap of like 15 hours and just do a lot of like content in the game for goals and stuff because it's our 1 year being affiliate. So hopefully that goes well. I've never done one before.
It's been 1 year already?
Yeah, 1 year since we went affiliate. Wow. It's so weird. It's been fun. It's been a very fun year, and it's been like popping off way more lately, so I'm very happy about that.
That's really good.
Yeah. And we still haven't heard anything back about that sponsorship, the $4,000 one that we have no idea who ordered it. So in a few weeks, we'll find out if we're actually getting paid for that or if they're going to be like, oh, just kidding. It was fraud.
Damn.
I hope we get paid for it. I'm like counting on getting paid for it, but I don't want to get too excited still.
I hope so, too.
I know. Because we have no fucking idea. It means that 30 people ordered and we don't know who it was. It's confusing. Hopefully it's real. But yeah, things are looking good stream-wise. And I have been having a lot of fun and playing games with lots of people. I've also been looking more seriously at traveling. I think we mentioned last week, like, we're not going to Yosemite anymore because we're going to focus on Europe. I was, like, looking up and, like, about to book a flight to Amsterdam, but I'm holding off a little bit because we have a friend that we met via streaming who, like, lives in England. So we are going to go and meet them, but we're undecided if we should, like, fly to London and meet them there and take a train to Amsterdam, or them and their partner might come to Amsterdam to meet us. So I've not booked a flight because now I'm like, well, I don't know. Now more people are involved.
Damn, that's cool though.
I know, right? It's going to be so fun because I know I'm just going to copy their accent over and over. Whenever we're on Discord and like we're on Discord last night playing games, there's like a few of us and they would just be like, literally. And I'd just be like, literally in it. It's just a lot of fun to me.
I was like, do they get mad?
They probably will once I do it over and over again in real life. They're like one of the mods for our channels, which means like we trust them enough to where we're like, you have permission to ban people on our channel. Like, you're, we've talked to you enough. You've been around enough. You seem trustworthy. God, hopefully they are. But I don't think that they'd be mad. They'd probably just be like, damn, this bitch. She's doing it again. I can't believe you've done this. But anyway, I need to get my practice in while I can. But
watch Harry Potter.
Watch Harry Potter. I should. I should prepare. It'll Potter. Be fun. Potter. But I don't even know. I mean, it's so funny when you have gaming friends because you just call them by their gaming names. So I'm like, I don't even know their technical real name. I'm just like, your name's not Alfresco? What do you mean? Who knows?
Alfresco.
But yeah, I'm excited. Shout out Alfresco. You don't listen. They're the ones who also made the, I think I mentioned before, I have a little Animal Crossing fossil, like 3D printed things. That was by them. And some capybara stickers. They're a little artiste.
Oh.
Yes, they have an Etsy store and everything.
That's cool. That's really yeah. cool.
They're making a 3D version of this weapon in RuneScape. Like, it's a little mini, it's a dragon warhammer. So it's just like a red warhammer. And I'm going to order one. So then something I like to do on stream is bonk people. It's like you bonk people when they act horny, low-key. So, like, sometimes people get, like, a little too flirty in the chat, and I just make this bonk noise. So now, once I have the warhammer, I can make the bonk noise and just hold the little warhammer to the camera. It's like I'm bonking them and be like, stop it. Knock it off.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then next, I need a little spray bottle. There's a spray bottle, too, that people use, like, in the Discord. If someone's acting horny, too. They're like, no. Stop it. Keep it appropriate. But yes.
Naughty.
Like, you're like, how have you been? And I'm like, so I've been bonking and spraying everyone. But I think that's basically what I've been up to. I'm still undecided if I'm going to Pride next week, too. We'll see.
Oh.
You gonna go?
I think so.
Hey.
If I have money. But
and I don't know
I
how
really
cost.
Want to. I think it's around 30 for both days.
Okay. I probably only want to go one day. Leah, my sister Leah, is, for anyone who doesn't know, she used to be on here. She was like asking me to go. And she was saying like earlier, I've not texted her back. She texted me 7 hours ago and I've been too lazy to read her text completely. But she was like, I don't see any one day passes. And she was like sending me pictures and stuff. And I've not fucking responded.
I'm sure there is, unless they're sold out.
Yeah. I mean, even if they are, $30 for 2 days isn't bad. Because, I mean, I thought I'd have to pay $30 for 1 day. So it would basically just be, like, paying for that. But, I mean, I want to go both days. She can't. I need to see. I don't know if Robert wants to go or not yet. Because he's been working a lot of overtime on weekends now.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. You know what? I am looking now. And it does only say two-day general for $38. That's weird.
That's it. Oh, yeah, I guess there is no more one day.
I'm torn because I don't have anything very pride-ish to wear. I have my shirt that says Bye Till I Die, but it's white, and I know I'm going to be sweating. I don't want to have pit stains. So I was thinking I could just go full emo. I feel like I always go emo at Pride, and I just use glitter instead.
Oh, it does say who's going to be there.
It's going to be, I think it was like Daya or Daya and Ashnikko or something?
Yeah, Ashnikko, Baby Tate, Snow the Product, Milo, Starmax, Mila Jam, Transviolet, and Azja.
I only know two people. I mean, one of them you didn't even say. I only know Ashnikko and Daya. Daya or Daya? I don't know how to say her name.
Me either.
You definitely know a song by each of them.
Probably.
If you don't know who they are. Yeah.
Daya or Daya, I think I have heard a song, like their name looks familiar. And
yeah.
Snow the Product, I've also heard of.
Oh, sick. Okay. Hell yeah. So maybe I'll see you there.
Everyone else, I have not.
Yeah, San Diego one is like obviously still a big deal. We do live in a big city, but it's not like LA one where it just sells out like a normal concert.
Yeah, true.
I remember a few years ago, Kehlani was performing in LA and they like completely sold tickets and like weren't letting people in anymore.
Yep, I went that year.
You went to the Kehlani one?
Yep.
How did I not know this?
I don't know.
I probably blacked it out because I'm jealous.
Maybe. Wait. But yeah, I remember that because I'm pretty sure I went to that one.
I love Kehlani. Well, actually, did she say anything about me?
Yeah, she said, I can't believe she didn't come.
I can't believe she's done this.
Can't believe.
But anyway, other than that, I got nothing. How have you been?
I've been good. I've just been going to school and then usually come home and just hang out because I have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm actually gonna look for a job.
Wait, what does Alara say about this? You quit a job so you'd have more time. And now you're gonna get another job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's not the happiest, but I feel like we have to.
Just you need the money.
Yeah, financially, we are struggling, so we need the monies. And so fair. I'm going to try to take my time finding one that's like works with a good my schedule. Fit. Yeah, like I don't want to work weekends and, you know, just something that's basically like an evening shift, like right after school.
Part-time, no weekend job that's chill.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I have faith that you can find that.
If worst comes to worst, I was saying, telling her that I can switch back to PM class and then get a full-time job.
Well, she probably would not like that though, huh?
No.
Yeah, you'd never be home.
But I mean, I could do the same thing where I wouldn't work weekends, you know?
That's true. So you'd have the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sucks.
But
school and work together sucks.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, if I have to, I will, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you won't be in school that much longer.
Yeah, no, I graduate late October, basically.
That's so soon, 3 months?
Is it? Oh, yeah, we're in the 9th month. Oh, shit.
We're in the 7th month.
So, yeah, you're right. It's like 9th of September.
I always get 8 and October mixed up because like octagon. Whenever I think of 8, I automatically think October, and I'm like, no, that's 10. So, you know, similar vibes.
Yeah. You know the reason behind that?
Why?
Because August. I think it was supposed to be like only 10 months or something like that.
What?
You haven't heard about that?
No.
I honestly don't know like the actual history about it, but I remember it was only supposed to be like 10 months or something like that, but they added like August. But it like fucked with it.
What the fuck?
Yeah. They added, I think, July and August.
Oh, yeah. The calendar consisted of 10 months and a year of 304. This is the early Roman calendar.
Yeah.
Weird. That's so weird. Okay. How do they just add months like that? Bro, time's not fucking real. How do you just make up months?
It's really not.
I hate that so much. I wish I didn't know. Oh my god.
But yeah, I remember they were saying because there was like a emperor or some shit named Augustus and he wanted his name in the calendar.
Oh god.
Or like part of it.
Well, he got his wish, it appears.
But yeah. Yeah, not too much is going on. Just, I'm officially a senior and can take clients now.
Woo! Should I just come into your school with my wigs?
You can.
I don't know if people will laugh at me.
No.
And just show up wearing them. I'll show up wearing the black one first. And it's just gonna look hella fucking weird.
No, I mean, you guys could come in and I can Ooh. Cut your hair and
my
your
fake wig. Hair. Okay, no, my real hair too.
Yeah, your real hair too. I can
hey. Do your undercut. Oh my gosh, yes. I need to. Okay, I'll message you about how to schedule that. I'm gonna write down my planner.
Yeah. Usually you have to call or you could just let me know a day before and I can have them basically like schedule.
It's a listen.
Yeah, basically. Like they'll just put it in the system so they won't book me with anybody else.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, cool. Hopefully we could do that next week or something.
But yeah, I'm like scared and excited for that because now I'm going to start taking clients.
And they better tip you.
We'll see.
I'm a tip you, don't worry.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
What if I'm just like hyping up, I'm gonna tip you and I give you like a dollar?
I'll call you out.
Like, but you said.
But you said you didn't tip me.
I lost you. I mean,
a dollar is a tip, so.
It is a tip. Sorry if I'm making you feel some type of way because you always tip your hair person a dollar, but that's really not a lot of money to tip your hair person.
No, not that, not at all. I mean, I'd appreciate anything, but like, you know.
Especially after me saying all this shit, that'd be funny.
Yeah.
Do I do it for the meme?
Well, yeah, I can't really think of anything else.
Okay. Well, we can move on to the stories if you want.
Nah.
Nah, let's just coast for a little bit.
Let's just fuck around.
Just fuck around and find out. Doesn't make sense in this context. I'm just trying to sound cool, like one of the youngins.
Actually, yeah. I some girl at school made me feel old. Cause, like,
why?
She like said some like acronym, and I was like, what is that? And then she was like, you don't know what that means? I was like, no.
What was it?
I don't remember.
Oh, your senile brain doesn't remember.
Yeah. I was like, forgive me. I am an old man, apparently. And she started laughing.
That's so funny. There's like this one person on our stream that's 17. And they were talking about somebody else that like is supposedly very like toxic in the RuneScape community. And they're like, yeah, like this man's just like fucking middle-aged and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, how old are they? They were like 38. And I was like, stop it. Stop.
That's middle-aged.
No! I was shocked and confused.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because at school there's just, it's a big variety, you know? Like there's a lot of like 18, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds. And then
literally like your mom's there.
Yeah, and then it like just
that wasn't
jumps.
A joke. His mom's literally there.
Yeah, my mom literally goes to my school. We go to the same school.
That sounded like a joke. I'm like, and your mom.
No, but yeah, it's just, you know, there's a whole of like age range.
Yeah, it's never too late to go follow your dreams.
Never, ever.
Never, ever.
All right. Well, I guess I'll start.
Yeah, I forgot you were going first. I was like,
exciting.
I know.
All right. This one is actually a little poem.
Ooh.
And it is titled Within Him.
Cool poem name.
By Cockney Pasta.
Said a funny word.
Cockney. Within him lies the darkness. Within him, evil looms. Within him lies your terror. Within him lies your tomb. Within him lies your sadness. If you are ever caught to spend all time in turmoil, within his hellish thoughts, his name contains no meaning, for his name contains no words. Within his is the abstract. Within him, you will blur. Within him, you are nothing but the sum of all your fears. Within him, you are no longer you, for within him, you are his.
Ew. That sounds like a creepy monologue that you'd hear in like a scary movie.
Right?
Maybe someone watch a scary movie.
You're not down.
I am. I like scary movies. They scare me, but I like them.
They should scare you.
Actually, I guess that's the whole point.
I heard that new movie that came out, I think it's called Black Phone. I heard it was actually really good.
I heard of that too. Someone in my chat said it on stream. Ooh, I should watch that. I don't know where it is. I'm going to type it though.
I so heard that the Minions movie is really good and I want to see it.
The Minions?
Yeah.
Speaking of scary movies, the scariest of them all.
Well, it's because I just started thinking about more movies. Okay, oh, I still need to see Lightyear.
Oh, the fucking Buzz Lightyear one.
I need to see it.
I heard it was so explicitly gay.
Oh my god, those 10 seconds.
Oh,
fucking wild.
I saw the stupidest tweet than somebody like making fun of all the weird homophobes about it, and they're like talking about the worst part of the movie was that whenever they showed the kiss, they zoomed in and then they replayed it in slow-mo, then they replayed in slow-mo with music playing, and then they had a bunch of people come into the theater and convert all of our kids to being gay, and then they had all of those take our kids on a bus and say that they're driving them out to Oregon. Just the dumbest shit.
What the fuck? It's so
I heard that's happening.
It's just so dumb that they get so mad over like a 5-second clip.
It's just like, stupid they get mad in general.
Yes, especially like if you consider what the fuck we watched growing up.
Oh yeah.
Like fucking, if you think about it, Beauty and the Beast, fucking bestiality basically.
I mean, everyone's into that.
Nah, I ain't.
No, it's stupid. Kids movies been having romantic storylines.
Or basically, yeah, like how they say, like, oh my god, they're like pushing gayness on them. But it's like, y'all technically pushing straightness on everybody.
Yeah, also, you're pushing cuntness on me, so fuck off. Don't want to hear that shit.
Hey, true.
I just cannot be bothered. I'm like, what year is it? Stop sounding like such a fucking moron. People are cool. Twitter's fun for that.
Making fun of people?
No, for seeing stuff that pisses me off.
Oh.
They get made fun of, but not by me because I just get annoyed and log out. But let me know how that movie is too. Honestly, I'm not that interested in the movie, but I like that there's supposedly a woman married to another woman. I'm sure it's very vague.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen like clips of it and it dead ass does not look bad.
Great, of course. Disney be doing like the most shit. They're like the most controversial thing yet. And then they're like Beauty and the Beast. They just show that guy dancing with another guy. And I'm like, oh my god, cover your eyes.
Same with Finding Dory.
What happened to Finding Dory?
There was a clip where I think it was Nemo and Marlin. And they were like hopping around on a stroller, I think. Or no, it was Dory and Hank. The Hank is the septopus.
Oh, okay, yes.
But, yeah, they were, like, going on basically under a little stroller, and it, like, it was a same-sex couple. It literally was, like, 2 seconds. Because
I just shit my pants.
You don't Why even, would you like, say this? You don't even really see their faces. It's, like, literally, like, 2 seconds.
That's the kind of shit Disney be doing, and they're like, we have representations. Like, dude, you should have a glimpse of people pushing a stroller.
Have you seen the short film Out?
No.
On Disney? Oh my god.
Is that actually gay?
It's actually gay.
Not implied gay. Like, if I watched this, not only is gay, would I know?
No. Like, it's gay.
Okay, then I'll watch it. And I can't stand the backlash to this stuff that's not even, like, explicitly queer at all. And I'm like, I hate it.
Well, I don't know if you heard. Did you hear about the Baymax TV show that they're coming out with?
Oh, I heard that. A trans guy bought pads in it.
Well, because he didn't buy it. He just suggested it because he's actually wearing like a trans flag. Like,
a t-shirt. Yeah, I remember. So, I saw that.
A lot of people are angry over that. But because, yeah, it's basically like a little like sneak peek clip. And it's like Baymax looking at the like feminine products. And then he asks like a lady that's like looking at a box. And it's like, what would you recommend? And then she's like, oh, I use these. And then the trans guy was like, oh, I use these. And then just more people were giving him suggestions. He's like, some like dad was like, oh, my daughters use these and stuff like that.
I'm going to throw up. Are you serious?
Yep.
On my Baymax?
Hey, that's my Baymax.
How many kids do you think are going to watch that and be like, yes, comrades, I've been recruited to the trans club?
They probably wouldn't even understand.
They probably would be like, what's a pad?
Yeah, true. But like, it's just something subtle that only bothers adults because kids don't like fucking give a shit.
Kids don't
like,
give a shit about anything.
They don't even know unless they're like, my sister, she would probably recognize the flag, you know?
Yeah, because she has a trans brother.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, like, situation, they probably wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's so stupid. It's stupid, the people of the backlash, and it's just stupid that Disney is doing like the smallest things. I'm like, if people are gonna be backlashing, at least make it like fucking crazy gay, dude. True. I want to see like everyone,
a gay princess.
Yes, a gay princess. I want all the trans guys buying their feminine products at the store, all in the same aisle. I guess it wouldn't be feminine products. I just want to say pads and tampons,
menstrual products.
Hey, menstrual. Yeah. Yeah. Disney, make it more. There's gonna be backlash no matter what. Just go hard, bro.
True. We need a gay princess. We need a gay superhero, a trans superhero.
Hell yeah.
A trans
people are gonna princess. Lose their minds no matter what. You might as well make it more fun.
Yeah.
Than one line at a store helping a robot.
He's not just any robot, okay?
Okay. Baymax is actually gay. Did you know that?
You're right.
You're right. I mean, we don't know.
We don't know.
He never explicitly said.
But I love Baymax. That movie's like so underrated.
That movie's fucking sad, dude.
Yeah.
His brother?
But it's a good movie.
I'm not going to say spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
I'm not going to say anything.
Okay.
But it's sad.
Yes.
Tadashi. That's all you need to know. I mean, every fucking Pixar movie's sad. It's weird. I'm like, stop being so depressing.
I love it.
Of course you do, emo ass.
I am an emo ass. Actually, last night, we were watching The Good Doctor. And I don't know why, but like the episode you're watching, it was just so sad. And I just kept saying, I'm going to cry. I'm going to cry. And then Alaris was like, you would. And I was
you
like,
would. And what?
Yeah, both Alaris and my sister were just making fun of me because I do get like that, like with movies and stuff. I don't know. I just like feel the emotions and it makes me like emotional.
Yeah, I get that way sometimes. Like I'll cry when recessive happens in shows, but you're a whole nother level, bro.
I really am. Like even with like Disney movies that I've seen before, like I'll literally cry. I'll start crying in like sad scenes.
I mean, I won't watch Up again because the beginning of it.
Oof.
No. That even hurts. Hearing that music and TikToks, people use the Up music that was a montage of this married couple's life. This isn't really a spoiler. It happens immediately. But, like, mm-hmm. It's a married couple and, like, one of them dies. And there's happy music the entire time that turns sad. People use that music on TikToks. And I'm like, what's wrong with you, you sickos? Why would you ever use this music?
True.
I don't like it.
But, yeah, that's true. Basically, a lot of Disney movies are fucking sad.
They're all so sad. I mean, I guess it's more relatable because there's, like, I guess people get sad or whatever, but I sometimes like whenever I watch shows, like I was thinking of this, I'm not going to say any spoilers for anything. Don't worry. Like watching stuff like Stranger Things. I'm like, man, I would just watch a sitcom of these characters. I just like them. Can they just all be happy? Just hanging out. Nothing scary happening.
True. I think about that sometimes too. I'm like, yeah. You just don't want to like stop seeing them in those characters.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't even need conflict. But, yeah. But anyway, I should probably go to my story.
Yeah, I was like, we went on a long tangent.
In conclusion, Disney, be more gay. You're gonna get shit no matter what. Just do it, bro. Just do it.
Be gay.
Be gay. It's okay.
I'm here and I'm queer.
I'm here and I'm also queer. What? Got him. All right. So my story is called Nighty Night, and this is by Tim Sprague. For the past 5 years, it's just been Ian and me. My wife's pregnancy with him wasn't easy. There were a number of scares and close calls due to health issues that she had experienced all her life. Every doctor she'd ever been to had told her that she would never be able to get pregnant in the first place. She put on a brave face and joked that she would just get an entire litter of puppies instead. But when she was thinking about it and didn't know I was watching, her real feelings were etched all over her face. She loved kids, and the thought of not being able to have one herself was heartbreaking for her. We discussed other options, of course. Adoption, fostering, you name it, and we looked into it. We even had a meeting scheduled with an adoption agency when a miracle happened. That miracle was Ian. Against all odds, Ellen became pregnant. Her doctors were at a complete loss. It should have been impossible, but suddenly there we were, talking about converting our second bedroom into a nursery and planning out how to shuffle around our work schedules to make sure that one of us was always home with the baby. The complications began about 4 months into the pregnancy. Seemed like every few weeks we're at the hospital while the staff ran tests and performed procedures. Ellen was amazing during all of it. I was acting like a complete lunatic, worried out of my mind about every little thing. But she would just lay there in the uncomfortable hospital bed, stroking her increasingly large belly and smiling to herself. She'd tell me that she just knew that everything would work out in the end, and that all the issues were just bumps in the road. She went to labor early, just a few days after the 31-week mark. She waddled into the kitchen and told me in a very calm and very matter-of-fact tone that the baby was coming. I'd been getting ready for bed, so in that same collected manner, she retrieved the bag we'd packed weeks earlier in the car keys while I frantically got dressed and grabbed the few necessary items that hadn't gone into the bag yet. 6 hours later, Ian was born. He was so small, and I could feel my heart sink as he emerged. The doctor immediately took him over to a radiant warmer table where he and a nurse began working with him. A second nurse kept me from getting too close to ensure that I didn't get in the way. The activity suddenly stopped, and the most wonderful sound filled the room. Our son started to cry. The doctor informed me that due to Ian's size, he would need to spend a couple of weeks in the newborn intensive care unit, but that from what he could see, the child would be fine. I remember feeling so relieved that I had to put a hand on the bed's footboard to steady myself. My fingers had just touched the plastic when the alarm on Ellen's monitor went off. Ian and I lost her in less than an hour. It wasn't anything that the hospital staff did wrong, and it wasn't anything that could have been prevented. The stress of the labor and birth had been too much for her. She'd suffered massive hemorrhaging. The staff did their absolute best to save her. It just wasn't possible. She never even got a hold of Ian before she was gone. I never got a chance to mourn her. I was now a single parent, and all that mattered was that tiny little baby in the NICU. The next few weeks were spent going to work, getting through my shift, and immediately returning to the hospital to sit with Ian all night before doing it all over again. Shortly before he was released, I secured a position with a new company. It paid less, but it allowed me to work from home. Without much of a family support system, I needed to be there for him at all times. After all, it was just me and him now. I wish so much that Ellen could see this incredible child that we made together. He's loving, energetic, frustrating, confounding, and so much more. He's everything that we could have hoped for and so much more. He always had a very vivid imagination for his age, which is partly why I didn't believe him when he first told me he was being visited by something during the night. It took a while to get to this point, but we've settled into routine each evening. We have dinner together, spend about an hour running around outside if the weather is nice or playing inside if it isn't. Ian gets his bath, then he lays down to sleep for the night. This routine is supposed to be finished around 8 o'clock each night, but if you have kids, you know that no routine is foolproof. On the first night that he was visited, I didn't manage to get him wrangled into bed until almost 9. I was catching up on work at my desk when I heard Ian yell for me. I'm ashamed to admit that my first reaction was to feel irritated. Normally when he called out like that, he was trying to get one last drink of water to tell me that he isn't tired and can't go to sleep. That would happen at least twice a week. I said that I have an incredible child, not one that wasn't prone to the usual 4-year-old tendencies. When he immediately cried out a second time, though, I stood up and pushed my chair back so hard that it tipped over. There was panic in his voice. I hurried up the short flight of stairs to the second floor and flung his door open, my hand immediately going for the light switch. Ian was sitting in his bed with tears streaming down his face. The left leg on his pajama pants was pulled up and his hands were pressed down on the skin. The sheets and comforter from his bed were laying on the floor. His pillow was hanging halfway off the mattress. I hurried over to him and knelt down next to his bed, putting down the safety rails as I did so. He immediately flung his arms around my neck and started crying harder. The sobbing was so intense that I started to cough uncontrollably. I pried him off me and held him in my lap to allow him to catch his breath. We sat there for a long time, him crying and sniffling loudly with me gently stroking his hair and telling him that everything was all right. When he finally calmed down, I sat him on the edge of his bed and took his hands away from his leg. There were 3 long scratches running down it. They weren't deep, but there were a few tiny beads of blood. I gently asked him what had happened. He remained silent. I asked him again, and this time he lifted his head to look me in the eyes. "Nighty night hurt me," he told me in a tiny voice. I looked back at him in confusion. I don't know what I expected him to say, but it certainly hadn't been that. "Nighty night," I asked softly, "like what I tell you at night before you go to sleep?" "Nighty night," Ian repeated, more forcefully this time. "He scratched me, like the bad cat did." Just after his 3rd birthday, he'd been scratched by a neighbor's kitten while trying to play with it. The claws hadn't even punctured the skin, but the incident had stuck with him. "I'm sorry, big guy, I don't understand. Are you saying that Nighty Night is a cat?" "No, cat. Nighty Night is a monster, Daddy. He hurt me." I looked down at the scratches. They were obviously real, but just as obviously they hadn't been caused by any monster. Something else had happened. I want to make it clear that I never thought for a second that Ian was lying to me. Sure, he was prone to the occasional fib, just like any young child was, but he never lied to me about important things. Besides, he was too scared to make up a story. Scooping Ian into my arms, I carried him into the bathroom and got the first aid kit out of the cabinet. As I sat down the toilet and maneuvered him into my lap, I mentally slapped my forehead. The past few nights, I'd forgotten to trim his fingernails when I had given him his bath. He must have scratched himself in his sleep. It had woken him up, and his still half-asleep mind must have interpreted the whole thing as a monster attacking him. I quickly bandaged the scratches before trimming his nails with a small silver clipper. He'd calmed down by that point, and I gave him a hug before carrying him back to his room. When I went to put him down in bed, however, he held onto me so tightly that I nearly tipped forward. He absolutely refused to sleep in his bedroom that night. We ended up falling asleep together on the couch downstairs, and by the time the sun was up, he was back to his usual self. The events of the previous night seemed to be forgotten. It was Saturday, and because I don't have to work on the weekends, I took Ian to a local state park. We spent the entire day playing on the playground and splashing around in the lake. By the time we left the park and headed home, we were both exhausted. He fell asleep in his car seat just a few minutes away from the house. I carried him inside and up to his bed. He remained passed out through the entire process. I planned to let him sleep for an hour or so. He still needed to eat dinner, and I knew that if he napped for too long, it'd be almost impossible to get him down that night. I kicked off my shoes and flopped down in a chair to enjoy the momentary silence. That silence didn't last long. It was shattered by Ian screaming. It wasn't a yelp or crying out like it had been the previous night. This was a full scream, one filled with pain and terror. I yelled his name as I leaped up the stairs and burst into his room. Ian was seated on the floor, his thumb in his mouth and his eyes watery. He was rocking back and forth slowly. He looked up at me with a blank expression, as if he knew that I was there, but my presence didn't mean anything to him. I picked him up, and as I did, I felt something warm and wet in my hand. I pulled away from his back and saw that there was blood on my fingers. Just as I had the night before, I carried him into the bathroom and turned on the light. I immediately saw his back reflecting off the mirror of the sink, and it felt like ice was poured into my veins. Pieces of his shirt were torn away, and the shreds that remained were red with blood. I sat Ian on the counter and lifted the shirt up over his head. He was unresponsive during the entire process, and the part of me that was still thinking clearly wondered if he was in shock. On his back were three cuts, each of them spaced roughly the same distance as the scratches on his leg. These were much deeper than those, though, and they were bleeding freely. I bandaged him as fast as I could before taking him downstairs and back out to the car. The cuts were too much for my basic first aid skills. He needed a doctor. The drive to the hospital was torture. I patted his car seat as much as I could with a blanket to try to take pressure off his back, but he started screaming in pain before we got very far. Knowing full well that it was illegal, I pulled over, unstrapped him, and set him down in the passenger seat with him sitting sideways before getting back in and continuing to drive. Maybe that was the wrong call. I honestly don't know. All that I know is that I couldn't stand for him to be in agony like that. The nurse behind the emergency room desk immediately waved us through the door when she saw Ian's back through the window. She ran out to get a doctor while I carefully set him down on a nearby gurney. I hugged him as best as I could without touching his back and told him that everything was going to be okay. "I know it hurts, little man, but I have to ask you something," I told him, giving him a reassuring smile. "What happened?" "Nighty-night," he replied immediately in a matter-of-fact voice. "Nighty-night hurt me." I didn't have time to question him further. The doctor arrived and she took one look at Ian's back before telling a nurse to wheel him to a nearby examination room. I went to follow, but the doctor told me she thought it was best if I wait outside. Her eyes were looking past me as she spoke, and when I glanced over my shoulder, I saw she was looking at a security guard standing at the far end of the hallway. If I had been thinking straight, I would have understood what was happening, but at the time, I was too worried about Ian to figure out what that look meant. The doctor went to the examination room as the nurse came back out. She put her hand on my arm and gently led me away from the door. I protested, of course, but she made it clear that I had to come with her and answer some questions before I'd be able to see Ian. She started by asking me if there were any pets or animals in the house, to which I replied that there weren't. She then asked if we'd been with anyone else when his injuries had occurred. When I told her that we hadn't, she followed up by inquiring if I'd been drinking that day. That was the moment I started catching on. The hospital staff were trying to determine if I had been the one to hurt my son. At some point during the conversation, a man in a gray suit entered the hallway and came to a stop next to us. He introduced himself as a social worker, and he stated that it was his job to make sure that Ian was safe and got the best care possible. He asked his own set of questions, and I answered them as best as I could, but I was sure that he wasn't really believing me. It didn't help that I couldn't tell him what happened because I had no idea myself. Sometime later, the doctor came back out of the room and informed me that while the cuts had been shallow enough to bandage, the other two had required stitches. To say that I was irate was an understatement. I wasn't upset that she'd done what was medically necessary. I was angry that I'd been kept out of the room the entire time instead of being in there to comfort him during the process. She stood there calmly as I yelled, and once I'd said my piece and was winding down, she told me that she was recommending that Ian stay at the hospital overnight for observation. After taking a deep breath, I asked as calmly as I could if I'd be able to stay with him. She didn't answer, but the social worker did. He told me in a clearly practiced tone that due to the nature of the injuries, he was going to take Ian into his custody for the night while he worked to determine the nature of the injuries. His tone might have been pleasant and measured, but the implication behind his words was very clear. "You think I hurt Ian," I said, fighting back a second wave of anger. "I would never hurt my son. If you think for one second that I'm going to let you..." "That's enough," the social worker snapped, cutting me off. "You need to stop right there. I haven't made a determination one way or another on if I think you did this. I will say that I've met a lot of abusive fathers in my time, and you don't strike me as one of them. I have policies and protocols I have to follow, though. What's best for everyone involved is for you to go home for the night, get some sleep, and let me do my job so we can get this put behind us." He had caught me off guard. I stared at him for a long moment before nodding once. Anything I did other than what he told me would only jeopardize my situation. And even though the thought of being apart from Ian for a night made me sick, the thought of him being taken away permanently was much worse. I nodded again and he patted me on the arm. He told me to come back in the morning and ask for him at the desk before turning to go into the examination room. As he closed the door, I clearly heard Ian call out for me. I left the hospital feeling as if my entire world was burning before my eyes. I went home and immediately marched up to Ian's room. I was determined to figure out what had happened to him. The scratches on his leg could have been explained away by him causing them in his sleep, but the cuts on his back were another matter. He couldn't have reached that area of his body. Even if he could have, there was no way that he could have made markings that deep. Something else had happened. I tore apart his room looking for answers. A loose screw or nail that he leaned up against, a broken piece of bed that I hadn't noticed, a toy with something protruding, anything. I examined every inch of the room from top to bottom. I came up empty. There was nothing I could find that could have caused his injuries. Defeated, I leaned up against the wall and slid down to the floor. Something caught my eye and I reached over to pick up a small stuffed duck. Its yellow cloth had faded and overall looked a bit worse for wear, but I could still easily identify it as the first toy that Ellen had bought for Ian. It had been right after we'd found out that she was pregnant. She named it Mr. Quackers, an absurd name for an absurd-looking duck. The events of the day caught up with me, and I started to nod off. I felt my eyelids growing heavier with each heartbeat. This was good, I reasoned. I'd get some sleep, and then be at the hospital the moment the sun began to rise. That was when I saw the creature standing in the corner of the room. One minute there was nothing there, and the next there it was. Its extremely tall gray body bent over as it pushed up against the ceiling. Its limbs were extremely long and thin for the creature's size. The two arms ended in three needle-like fingers that had to have extended at least 3 feet from its hands. Stretched out on its elongated neck was its face. Its lips, dry and cracked and missing entire chunks in some places, were pulled back in an internal grin that exposes oversized white teeth. The lidless eyes were black in the center, and the areas on a person would have been white were the dried yellow color of old parchment. Dark ichor that had pooled in its jaw slowly dripped onto the floor as it watched me. "Nighty-night," the creature rasped out. My entire body jumped as I snapped back to full consciousness. The creature was gone again, with no trace that even been there in the first place. The spots where the ichor had slithered onto the floor had vanished. I sat there on the floor, alone in the room with my pulse racing and my breath coming in short gasps. I could have attempted to rationalize what I had seen. It probably would have been easy enough to convince myself that I'd imagined it, that it was a trick of the light that my nearly unconscious mind had twisted into a horrifying vision. It was a perfectly rational explanation. The problem was that I had seen it. I knew that it had been real. There was no question about it in my mind. It was impossible, but I was sure that it had been occupying the corner of the room across from me seconds earlier. My breathing slowed and my panic was slowly replaced by nausea as a realization came to me. Ian had also seen this creature. It stood over my 4-year-old son with that nightmarish face. It then proceeded to hurt him not once, but twice. If I was this scared, I couldn't fathom how frightened he had been. Nighty night. Ian had called it nighty night. It must have said the same thing to him that it said to me. I got up off the floor and left the bedroom, closing the door behind me. I stood in the hallway for a moment before rushing into the bathroom, throwing up in the toilet. It went on for quite some time, so long that I started to wonder if it would ever stop. When it finally did, I collapsed against the bathtub, lightheaded and close to passing out. There was a thud from inside of Ian's room. I lifted my head as best as I could and looked out the bathroom doorway. I managed to focus my eyes just in time to see the knob on the bedroom door start to turn. There was an audible click and the door slowly swung open. Nighty Night's face took up much of the bedroom doorway as it grinned at me. I tried to stand up, but I was too weak from throwing up to manage it. I could only watch as Nighty Night press its head against the wood frame. It was too large to make it through the opening. My feeling of relief was only momentary. Nighty Night started to push its head harder. Its face stretched back as the head slowly began to force its way through. It was like watching rubber being forced through a hole. "Nighty Night," it rasped, the voice coming out distorted through the stretched lips. I had to leave, and I had to do so quickly. More of the monster's head was making through the doorway every second, and it wouldn't be long before it was free of the room's confines. Ignoring my aches and pains, I forced myself into a standing position. My head swam, and once again I was sure that I was going to pass out, but somehow I was able to barely remain conscious. Nighty Night's face was almost all the way through the doorway now. I stumbled into the hallway and pressed myself up against the opposite wall from the creature. Being as careful as I could, I moved past it, feeling its hot breath on me as I did so. Its teeth were mere inches away from my body. I made it through the thin opening and hurried down the stairs. My foot caught in the last step. It wasn't enough to make me lose my balance entirely, but it did trip me up and I stumbled forward before falling over the side of the couch. My head struck one of the armrests. I must have blacked out. I don't remember doing so, but the next thing I knew, I was being awoken by the sound of knocking. I sat up on the couch and immediately regretted doing so as the worst headache I'd ever had greeted me. The knocking continued. It took me a few seconds to figure out that someone was banging on the front door. I stood up and took two steps towards the door if I remembered what happened. I looked up the stairs, expecting to see Nighty Night squeezing its way down the hallway towards me, but the creature was gone. Still a bit dazed and not sure what else to do, I continued over to the front door and opened it. Standing on the other side was a large man in a police uniform. He was holding a clipboard under his arm and a pen in one hand. He nodded at me but didn't smile. He asked my name and I gave it to him. He informed me that he was here at the request of a social worker from the hospital and that he would like to inspect my son's room. I moved aside and let him into the house. I closed the door behind him and led him up the stairs. I didn't want to go anywhere near the second floor after what I experienced, but if I didn't comply with his request, it would undoubtedly impact my chances of getting Ian back as soon as possible. I took him to the still open bedroom door and we went inside. Nighty Night wasn't there, of course. The officer took the clipboard out from under his arm and asked me a few questions, and I answered them as best as I could. He scribbled some notes on the paper as I spoke. Seemingly satisfied with my responses, he then got down on one knee and examined the safety rail that ran along the sides of Ian's bed. "Have you done anything in the room since you brought your son to the hospital?" the officer asked. I looked around to try and figure out what happened, I told him. "Okay, but do you change the bed sheets or anything like that?" "What? No, I just moved things around and put them back. I didn't change the sheets." The officer nodded. "Well, it looks like Mr. Eaton was right." "Mr. Eaton?" "The social worker assigned to your son. See here, there's no blood in the sheets, but there are three streaks along the safety rail. They match up to where the poles are on the rail. Mr. Eaton thinks that your son tried to get out of bed while he was still out of it and slid over the rail. He must have caught the poles just right through the fabric and they dug into him. Cute kid, by the way. He said that he was going nighty-night and that his back started feeling ouchy when he got out of bed. Eaton put things together from there." I couldn't believe what I was hearing. The theory was wrong and Ian's word had been completely misinterpreted. The blood trails and the spacing of the rail poles were pure coincidence. It was all working completely in my favor, though. "Good thing, too," he continued. "If you hadn't figured it out or if I had found anything to prove him wrong here, we'd be having a very different conversation right now." Seemingly satisfied with everything, the officer left and went back to his car. I watched him through the window as he pulled out and headed down the street. The sun was starting to come up over the trees, and I could hear the family of robins in the front yard tree chirping. I decided that it was close enough to morning to go to the hospital and get my son back. It went smoother than I'd expected. The social worker had me fill out some quick paperwork so they had my statements for the record, and after that he led me to a patient room on the opposite side of the hospital. He'd barely opened the door for me when Ian came running up to me barefooted with his little hospital gown waving behind him and practically jumped into my arms. He hugged me tightly, and being careful to avoid the white bandages covering his stitch cuts, I hugged him back. We stood there for what seemed like an eternity, me crying and him telling me all about his stay in the hospital. That was 2 months ago. The house that I raised Ian in is currently for sale, and my realtor tells me that there are a number of people interested, even though it hasn't been listed very long. A seller's market, she calls it. I've only been back twice since that night, once to pick up our clothes and other necessary items, and once to pack the remainder of our belongings and put them into storage. Both times during the middle of the day, and each time I made arrangements for Ian to stay with someone else instead of accompanying me. We've been living at a hotel on the other side of town. My long-term plan is for us to move far away, possibly all the way to the coast. I want to put as much distance between us and this place as possible. Last week, I read a newspaper article in the local paper about an officer that killed his wife. According to the report, he had said that he'd just started dozing off one night when a giant monster appeared in his room. He'd grabbed the gun that he kept in his nightstand and fired off 5 shots at it. The monster disappeared, but his wife had been walking to the room at the same time, and 2 of the bullets struck her, killing her almost instantly. No one believed him, of course. How could they possibly have? It was a ludicrous story. He seemed so convinced that he was telling the truth that a psychological evaluation was ordered before formal charges were filed. 3 days later, he was found dead in his cell. Not just dead, but damn near decapitated. The police are baffled. He was alone in his cell, and there was nothing he could have used to do that to himself. The guards think that one of the other prisoners got in and did the job. Former cops don't have a lot of friends in jail, after all. They're at a loss to explain just how a prisoner could have gotten into the cell and caused so much damage without alerting anyone. This was the same officer who had come to my house.
What the fuck?
I know what happened to him. It was the same thing that happened to myself and my son. It was nighty night. I think that I've gotten the creature's appearing and disappearing act figured out. I was on the verge of becoming unconscious both times that I saw it. The first time I was almost asleep, and the second time I was trying not to pass out. When I actually did black out, it didn't harm me. The officer said in a statement that he was falling asleep when he saw the monster in his room. I think Nighty Night exists in that ever so brief moment between awake and asleep. When you enter into that moment, you can see it, and it can look right back at you. Or maybe I'm wrong and it's always there, watching and waiting until it could come for you in the short time where your world and its are connected. I don't know. I don't have all the answers, and I doubt that I ever will. Knowing exactly what Ian had gone through might provide more insight, but it doesn't matter. I refuse to ask him about it. He's sleeping through the night now that his wounds have mostly healed, and I'm not going to dredge up bad memories that could only hurt him. He deserves to be safe and protected from things, both natural and unnatural. He's been through enough already. I'm afraid that he's going to be through more before this is all over. Last night, as I watched him sleeping on the bed in our hotel room, I started to drift off in the uncomfortable chair in the corner of the room. I was just about out when I heard something through the glass window to my right. It was faint, as if coming from quite a distance away, but I recognized it immediately. Nighty night, the raspy voice called out in the darkness. I jerked awake and immediately stood up to start packing our things, being careful not to wake Ian up as I did so. He needed his rest. We're going to be on the road for a long, long time. And
goddamn,
I want to watch a fucking short movie of this,
dude. Yeah, I think it's dope,
right? And also because I can't really do that nighty night voice, I need them to do the voice for me.
Nighty night,
but they said it's like
raspy.
Oh my god, that hurt my throat. Nighty that was night. Bad. See, okay, that was good.
I heard it.
That hurt it. Maybe that's why he's so violent, because it hurts whenever he says nighty-night. He's like, my throat. Does anyone have water? And then he just, like, stabs him or whatever.
All right. My next one is kind of medium length. It is titled Stories for My Daughter.
Okay.
I know they say Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year, but for me, it's Halloween. Same.
Yep, same. I love them both, but Halloween's number one.
Yeah. I deck the hall with cobwebs and fake spiders. It's just such a special time. Autumn is here and the leaves are beginning to fall. It's time for dressing up and suspending reality. We sit in our cozy homes with our jack-o'-lanterns and candy, scaring ourselves and almost allow ourselves to see something otherworldly. My daughter has always loved scary Halloween stories, and last year was no different. We were at the kitchen table, hauling out our pumpkins and drawing scary faces on them, ready to carve. As we scooped the stringy seeds into a large bowl on the table, she asked, "Is it time yet?" Time for stories. Okay, I smiled at her. Where should we start? How about the monkey's paw? No, no, that's an old one, she grimaced. Tell me something new. Okay, okay. And I glanced out the window and saw the moon disappearing behind a cloud. Right, I got one for you. And as we scooped and carved, this is the story I told her. Once upon a time, long ago, there was a boy named Jacob, and he lived with his father in a house on the outskirts of the forest. One night, his father arose him from a deep sleep. My son, he whispered, I have to go out. One of the women in the village is about to give birth, and I must be there. Jacob's father was the village doctor and was very much respected. But father, Jacob mumbled sleepily, what about the wolf? There had been sightings of a large wolf around the edge of the village and the forest, and the villagers were living in fear. Don't be afraid, son, his father reassured him. I'll lock all the doors and windows, and you'll be perfectly safe. The boy's chin trembled, but he trusted his father and agreed to try to go back to sleep. Once his father had gone out, Jacob couldn't sleep. Every noise and creak in the house seemed amplified. He took his blankets from the bed and curled up in front of the window, waiting for his father to return. He saw the full moon through his window and was confronted by light. Smells of the night forest wafted through his window and he dozed off fitfully. Eventually, he saw the lights from his father's car coming back up to the house. He was so relieved he ran to meet him. Jacob's father saw a huge wolf bound out of the house toward his car, but before he could do anything, he heard the sound of a gunshot, and the wolf fell to the ground. From the edge of the forest, a group of villagers appeared. They had formed a posse and had been out hunting the wolf. At first, they didn't understand the doctor's anguished cry. What have you done? He yelled. And he ran to the spot where the wolf had dropped, grabbing its body and cradling it in his arms. As it took its last breath, the villagers were horrified to see the wolf's massive furry body transform back into that of a child. So the doctor's son was the wolf? My daughter asked, her brown eyes wide. That's a sad story, Mommy. I guess it is, sweetheart, but sometimes horror is sad, as well as scary. Anyway, I think these are ready to be lit. Our pumpkins were finished and we carried them into the living room. We put them on a low table in front of the TV and lit candles in them. Tradition dictated now it was time for spooky cartoons. She'd seen them many times before and quickly got bored. She picked up a dusty pack of tarot cards from the table. Tell me my future, Mommy. I sighed. I don't use those anymore, honey. How about I tell you another story? Is it about tarot cards? She asked. No, although the magician in it did use cards to do some magic tricks. The story is called Smoke and Mirrors. She curled into me on the sofa and I began. Once upon a time, there was a man and he made his living doing magic tricks. He did children's parties and very small venues. He wasn't very good, and most of the time people couldn't tell when he switched cards or pulled things up from his sleeves. Then one day he was browsing the local newspaper when he saw an advertisement. Free to good home, pair of magic cabinets, amaze your audience. Well, he was very keen. He didn't earn much money, and that was the kind of thing he would have loved to use in his act but could never afford. He quickly rang the number on the advert and arranged to go pick them up. When he saw them, they were more than he ever could have hoped. They were roughly 6 feet tall and hexagonally shaped. Each outside wall was covered in full-length mirrors. The doors on the front swung open noiselessly, and the interior was lined in plush black velvets. Sounds fancy.
Fancy.
Fancy schmancy. The magician couldn't believe his luck and asked why the man was just giving them away. The seller just replied that he had no use for them anymore. "So, how do they work?" asked the magician. The seller disappeared back into his house for a moment and came back carrying a large case with the parrot in it. "I don't know how this works," he admitted. "It just does." And he put the parrot into one of the cabinets. He walked to the second cabinet and knocked on the door 3 times. "Welcome back," he boomed in a very theatrical tone. A hissing sound came from the first cabinet and smoke could be seen coiling from the cracks around the door. He opened the door of the second cabinet and there was his parrot in its cage. "Oh, these are marvelous," squealed the magician excitedly. He loaded them into his old van. "Just one word of caution," said the seller. "When I procured them, I was told under no circumstances to use a human being when doing this trick. I suggest you invest in a parrot yourself." The magician nodded his head eagerly and went on his way. After this, things picked up for the magician. While the rest of his act was still mediocre at best, people were very impressed with his magic cabinet act. He would leave the cabinets where people could examine them during his performance and do his transportation trick last. For most of his act, the audience would be barely watching, poking and prodding at the cabinets, trying to work out their secret. The magician was very proud of his new act, but something was bothering him. He currently used either a rabbit or a goldfish in a bowl for his cabinet trick, and he felt there was something a little dull about that. One day, as he reached the finale of his show, he realized his rabbit had escaped. He tried to explain, but the audience began to jeer him. Someone from the crowd shouted that they would quite happily get into the cabinet. In desperation, he agreed. A tall, muscular man made his way through the audience and got into his first cabinet. The magician was very nervous. He knocked on the door on the second cabinet and loudly announced, "Welcome back." Clouds of hissing smoke roiled from the first cabinet and the door of the second cabinet swung open. The tall, muscular man stepped out. He looked a little dazed, but none the worse for his experience. The audience clapped and the show was over. For the next few months, the magician carried on with his show, sometimes 2 performances a day. Only now he only used audience members for the transportation trick. He thought it looked more impressive, and the audience loved it. One evening, after a busy day, he was sitting relaxing, watching TV, when he saw something that made his blood run cold. There was a story on the news about a man who had gone crazy, killed his family with a kitchen knife. The magician recognized the man instantly. The tall, muscular man who had been his first to go in the cabinet. He couldn't eat or sleep, and nagging fears ran through his mind. In the end, he determined to go visit the killer in prison. He faced the killer through a thick glass pane. He picked up a phone on the wall next to him and gestured for the prisoner to do the same. "You may not remember me," he began. "Oh, I know who you are, magic man," the killer interrupted, "and I'm glad you come. I wanted to thank you." "Thank me," stammered the magician. "For what?" "Why, for welcoming me back into the world," smiled the killer. "I don't understand." "It's so much cooler here," the killer smirked. "So much cooler, and so many opportunities." "I don't understand," repeated the magician. "Why did you kill your family? What happened in the box?" The killer began to laugh. It was a sound that chilled the magician to the bone. "So it was an accident?" He laughed harder. "You stupid little man. Didn't you know? Your cabinets are portals. We have been watching and waiting for so long. We can't fit into parrots or fish or rabbits. But give us a human body? A demon can fit nicely into a human body. How many people have passed through your cabinets, magic man?" And with that, he dropped the phone, got up, and walked back into the prison. The magician sat numbly. Yeah, right? In his estimation, it was well over 100. "Ooh, My daughter's eyes were like saucers. So 100 demons on Earth? Oh, at least, I chuckled. I'm not sure the magician's math was very good. Anyway, baby girl, it's getting very late now. It's time we tucked you up in bed. We headed up the stairs and got her settled. She was very sleepy now. It had been a long night. Tell me the Halloween story, Mommy, she asked. Now, which story would that be, I teased. How about the one about the hitchhiker? She shook her head. The Halloween story, Mommy, she giggled. Okay, okay. I smiled. Now, you're sure you won't have bad dreams? She shook her head more passionately and grinned. I would never understand why my daughter loved this story so much, but I began. Once upon a time, there was a kindly queen, and she lived in a big castle in a kingdom far away from here. Her husband, the king, however, was mean and cross almost all the time, and one day he threw her down the castle stairs. The queen was badly hurt, and after that, she couldn't have any children. She had always loved children, and every Halloween, she would invite all the children from the surrounding village to the castle, which would be decorated with hundreds of carved pumpkins and thousands of candles. She'd give them the finest treats, and the children always had a wonderful time. Eventually, the king died, and the queen was left alone. Now, I know you probably think that she'd be pleased that the evil king was dead, but all that happened was that she got more and more lonely. She realized what she had missed out on her life and became sad and bitter. Her heart grew cold and black. She would look from the castle tower and see little children playing in the courtyard, and it no longer gave her joy. Their laughter grated on her like nails on a chalkboard, and an evil plot hatched in her mind. The next Halloween, she shooed the cooks and the maids from the kitchen and prepared all the Halloween treats herself. They were the most scrumptious candies and cookies made with only the finest ingredients. There was one ingredient she used that had no place in her recipes. She liberally mixed rat poison in with the sugar, and there was sugar in everything she made.
Ew.
Just like all the years before, the children came to her Halloween party. And like every other year, they stuffed themselves with all the goodies the queen had provided. As usual, they all had a wonderful time. At the end of the night, their parents came and took them home. That was a terrible night in the village. Some of the children were terribly sick. A lot of them even died. I heard a tiny snuffle from my daughter and looked down to see her sleeping peacefully. I kissed her forehead and made my way quietly out of her room. If she made it to the end of the story, she'd always say, "And that's why I'm not allowed to go trick-or-treating, isn't it, Mommy?" I thought back to the inspiration for my cautionary tale. That terrible Halloween night 6 years ago when some crazy woman had poisoned the children's candy. The sound of sirens filled the night air, and there were parents panicking and crying in the street. My neighbor came rushing out of his house, holding his limp son in his arms. The jack-o'-lantern on the step tumbling down in front of him, splattering into mush on the sidewalk, while he made a noise of pain so terrible it barely sounded human. I stood on my porch and stared at it, unable to comprehend the horror unfolding in front of me. Some of the children were dead before the ambulance arrived.
Ugh.
The clock on the mantelpiece downstairs struck 12 before pulling me back to reality, and I turned and looked back into my daughter's room. The witching hour had come and gone, and our special day was over. Her bed was empty.
Wait. Her daughter died during it, and now she only comes back on Halloween night?
Yeah.
Oh! I didn't really know what was going on. I was like, was she the one who poisoned them? I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was, like, first reading it, I was like, I was like, is she evil? Is she the evil, like, queen?
But no. Yeah. Damn. That's a good one, actually. We don't have any ghosty creepypastas, actually.
Yeah, true.
All right, my next one. This is probably my last one because it's like 15 minutes or so. It's called The Eye of the Storm by John Westrick. The storm slithered across the countryside, consuming all in its path. Hurricanes are nasty, especially in southern Florida. This one was a Category 4 with sustained winds of 150 miles per hour. Most people evacuate in such a tempest, but not my grandpa. The man is as stubborn as a boulder with less emotion to boot. He's a hard man, difficult to love but not entirely without his charm. He's faithful, slow and steady, and always does what he says. Grandpa is cut from a different cloth, old school through and through. His face is as severe as the storm, and his demeanor equally so. No one would consider him a pleasant man, not even his wife. For this reason, he lives alone in Hendry County on a plantation. I found myself stuck in the crosshairs of this ungodly devastation for his sake. I was worried for him. I'm his eldest grandchild, so I felt responsible for caring for him. To this day, I regret my decision. It left me scarred. Sleep eludes me. I lay in my bed unable to keep my eyes closed. In the stillness of the early morning, I hear his desperate cries. I told myself there's nothing I could do. This is probably true, but fear stole my breath away. I was powerless to stop them. Storms are the worst. The panic attacks begin. The memories come back in a flood of emotions. I remember all the details. I hear the screams, the noises no human mouth can produce. My therapist says they're fantasies my mind conjure to distract me from my loss. I want nothing more than to believe this, yet I know it is not so. I saw the eye. The crotchety old bastard shouted, "Jeb, move your ass. The storm's approaching. We still need to gather all the cattle into the barn." Thoroughly regretting my decision to help the old man, I responded, "I'm going as fast as I can. Yelling at me isn't going to make it better." At this point, the wind was whipping through the trees. The rain was pelting us in the face, feeling like pinpricks on our exposed skin. This was so stupid. The old man had insurance on the farm and all damages would be recompensated. Love makes you do dumb things. The old man was the only family I had left. My mom died in childbirth and my dad drank himself to death. Suicide one sip at a time. Death by bottle. I was left alone with no family members who cared for me. No legal guardian at the age of 14. Confused, lost, bouncing from couch to couch, consumed by anger at my mother for abandoning me, disgust for the weakness of my father, and jealousy of my friends who had loved ones. This is how Terrence Terry Clearwater found me. He took me in without a second thought. His level-headedness grounded me. The old man was the only consistent thing in my life. He genuinely saved me. Guilt and shame shatter my heart when I remember this. A debt to my grandpa will forever be unpaid. When he needed me most, I froze. The storm roared. It surprised me how loud hurricanes can be. A war was being fought outside, an onslaught of winds and rain against the longevity of the trees and stones. Judging from the noise, it seemed as if the storm was winning. We made our way indoors, stacking the heaviest beds and dressers against the windows. We weren't keen on having a branch tossed at the window to impale anyone. I began to fill the bathtubs and sinks with water, knowing that any time the power could go out. After we felt confident enough in our fortifications, the two of us gathered in the living room. To distract ourselves from the tempest huffing and puffing and trying to blow our house down, I dealt out cards. It was in the second game of poker when the lights began to flicker. Before we could even finish our hand, the lights were out altogether. For a second, we sat in the dark, listening to the wind and rain. It was oddly peaceful. That was the last peaceful moment I had with my grandpa. Sometimes I wake up, tears staining my pillowcase, yearning for that moment again. I don't think I would light the candles this time. I think I would just let that moment linger, stretching it out for as long as possible. I miss his gruff voice and rough hands, the sturdy pat on my shoulder, his signature way of showing me that he cared for me. He never outright said he loved me, but it was clear by his actions. Words are cheap, but actions are invaluable. He was invaluable to me. I ignited the flashlight and lit a sufficient amount of candles. My nose was assaulted by warring scents. Each tried to compete with its counterpart. The room smelled of pomegranates and maple, cinnamon and ocean breeze. Any smell imaginable was present. The smells made me queasy, but at least that is what I thought then. Looking back at it now, I'm convinced somewhere in my consciousness I was aware of what was about to happen. My grandpa grabbed his portable battery-operated radio, the one he used to listen to the ball games, and switched it to the local weather channel. In a crackling, staticky tone, the weather host predicted that the eye of the storm should be passing Hendry County in the next few minutes. The charming woman's voice promised that the worst had passed and there shouldn't be much more to worry about. Stay hunkered down and light your candles. The woman could not have been more wrong. The storm and one final torrent of ungodly fury blew with all its combined strength. An awful ripping noise, a crack, and an explosion. The 100-year-old oak in our front yard smashed through the kitchen window. I remember staring up through the gaping hole in the ceiling, seeing the pitch black of night, darkened by the suffocating clouds and whipping winds. It felt as if I was staring into the depths of the abyss itself. The storm at that moment ceased. No more wind, no rain, the clouds parted as the moon was visible. It was full, the eye of God appearing down on us. I stared perplexed at the blood moon. It was the color blood congealed on a corpse. The visage was malevolent by nature. It was not the celestial body I was used to. It was foreign, uncomfortably large. The moon seemed to open wide and swallow the night sky. The false moon had one dark spot in the center, a pupil in the center of an eye. The longer I looked at it, the more it peeked into the depths of my soul. It was alive. More than that, it meant harm. I was certain of this. I can't tell you how I knew this, but there was no doubt. The night sky, other than the crimson glow radiating from that celestial eye, was darker somehow. It wasn't merely darkness, it was inky blackness, void of any light. It was a sky bathed in pitch. No light refracted, no light illuminated. My flashlight's beam seemed to be choked in the night, an anorexic illumination emitting from the spotlight. Where my LED light would have ignited the sky like an offspring of the sun itself, it barely allowed me to see the far wall of the room. It was as if the cruelty of the storm split the fabric of our reality only to have the whole filled by this monstrosity. Perhaps that's exactly what occurred. Regardless, I found my adolescent self staring at the night. I can't rightly tell you how long me and my grandpa stood there looking at the eye in the sky. We didn't speak. What was there to say? We were glued to our spot, neck contorted, eyes locked on the celestial body. I'm not even sure I blinked the entire time. My eyes refused to break the soul gaze for one moment. Soul gaze it was. I understood the vileness at that moment. I met true darkness. Fear did more than fill my heart. It consumed me, a shadowy beast tearing into my sanity. I felt myself wandering, my consciousness being lost forever. It was the blood-curdling cries and the inky blackness that broke my mind's wandering. It was off in the distance, but I could not locate the origins. The darkness had more than distort light. The sound was odd. It was as if the night had substance to it, causing the sound waves to bounce off of it. Echolocation was impossible. One moment the sound had come from behind me. The next would be just outside my field of vision. I could not tell if the creatures were leagues away or if they lurked right outside of my sight. A different type of fear seized me. This kind was animalistic and natural, whereas the previous type was philosophical and soul-wrenching. There was a predator on the loose, my mind could comprehend. Before, the fear instilled by the eye in the night sky ripped my understanding entirely. It was something superseding my insignificant intellect. Still, my body became erect. My senses fired on all cylinders, attempting to detect and protect. The carnal portion of my mind took over. Self-preservation kicked in, and I unconsciously shuffled towards Grandpa. Safety in numbers. We huddled there under my dinner table, unwilling to make a sound, hoping, praying that the house would fall off into the distance. No such thing happened. Fear muddled our minds and we could hardly even breathe. Eventually, my grandfather whispered in a voice barely audible, "We need to get to the attic. We're exposed here. We could give our chance at hiding. Also, my guns are in a lockbox in there." Mostly because I lacked a better plan myself and I was petrified to be left alone, I followed him as we crept from under the table to the corner of the room. On all fours, we crawled from one side of the room to the other, careful not to make a sound. The cries were getting desperate, hollering, slobbering noises produced in the back of the throat. They made my blood run cold. In the dim light of my flashlight, I saw my grandfather trembling. His hands shook and his face grew sweaty. The bestial calls were terrifying, but I'd never seen my grandpa scared. This absolutely paralyzed me with fear. My grandpa survived the Korean War, Vietnam War, and helped train people in Desert Storm. If he was worried, then I knew we were in dire straits. We were not moving fast enough. I was deadly afraid those creatures stalking us would catch up to us. As we barreled forward, scuttling as fast as we dared, we turned the hall to run face to face with one of the creatures. It resembled a dog. I mean this in the loosest way possible. It was made of shadow. I don't mean it was shadowy. I mean the body was formed by the swirling darkness. Its paws were too large for the sleek frame, extended even longer by cruel claws protruding from its tips. The beast had twisted spines piercing its bent back. Its skin was flaky, like it was afflicted with a serious case of mange. Thank God I was unable to see the creature's face. Its ears were notched and stood erect. They shortened and lengthened in a mesmerizing pattern that was oddly pleasing to the eye. We backed away slowly, making sure we didn't lose sight of the demon dog. In reverse, we made our way to the living room, hoping to make it to the staircase. As we scooted along, we heard a scratching sound coming from the kitchen. My head twisted with breakneck speed to get a glimpse of a second creature climbing through the hole created by the fallen tree. We were exposed to it. The creature only had to look up from its incessant scratching to see us. Forgetting all pretenses, we climbed to our feet, scrambling across the hardwood hallway for the living room. I wasn't even trying to hide my footfalls. I fled with all my might. My grandpa was right behind me. The creatures heard our ragged breathing and our heavy footfalls. In seconds, they were in hot pursuit. Snarls and slobbering yells echoed down the hallway after us. Panic seized me and I ran faster than I ever thought possible. When I made to the stairway, I turned to look back. My grandpa was a few strides behind me. The creatures were barreling towards him. He wasn't going to make it. Our eyes locked. I saw that he saw he wasn't going to make it. His lips formed, "I love you, son." It was the first time I'd ever heard him say it. Tears filled my eyes. I knew I ought to help him, yet my feet remained locked firmly to the spot. I watched as he changed course and began to run towards the front door. The creatures were drawn further away from me. Still, I was unable to move. I stood there stunned, struck dumb in the presence of my grandpa's final heroic act. Time was put on a rewind, and for a second, I saw the man my bent grandfather used to be. A glorious man, young and full of life. He stood tall, accepting his death with stoic grace. My grandpa turned to me and we locked eyes. A moment later, then he bellowed, "Go get out of here, grab the gun and hide." As if it was magic, the ice in my veins melted. I moved with the grace of an Olympic athlete. I flung myself up the stairs, 3 steps at a time. I barreled through the spare bedroom, slamming the closet door against the plaster wall. I pulled the drawstring for the attic door up above my head. I shot up the pull-down ladder and found myself in pitch darkness. If I could only get to my grandpa's shotgun, maybe I could help him. It couldn't be too late. I can't lose him. He's all I have left. As if to make a liar of me, immediately I heard a familiar voice echoing from downstairs. It was my grandpa screaming. Tears filled my eyes. My vision began to sway. Those screams, those god-awful pleas for help. They tore great swaths out of my still-beating heart. I was consumed by those creatures, if not bodily, then emotionally. My grandpa, my strong, stubborn, and independent grandpa. I was left alone again in the dark, with no one to guide me. I collapsed to my knees in that scorching attic. I looked to the heavens, hoping to see God. All I saw through a leaking crack in the roof was that damned eye. The blood moon seemed to wink at me, pleased with the activities of this night. I heard the unearthly screeches of those dogs taper off. It was just me and the celestial body. We stared at each other for a moment, then two. The eye in the sky didn't want flesh. It wanted this. It wanted to gorge itself on my pain, the kind that remains. The kind no doctor can heal with clever medicines. The insatiable pain of loss with no hope of recovery. A broken heart unable to be mended. Guilt for actions not taken and prices not paid. I used to think I was brave, a strong man. Now I know the truth. Me and that eye both saw. I'm a coward through and through, willing to let those I love pay the price. With one final glance, I looked and saw that eye, and it saw me. I knew it, and it knew me. Then the winds picked up, and the clouds obscured the eye from my sight. I'd like to say I've never seen it since, but every time I close my eyes, I still see it. You see, I live my life underneath the watchful gaze of that celestial eye. And... kind of a lot.
Yeah. All right. This is my last one.
Okay.
It is titled The Screaming Woman.
Oh, what a name.
I noticed her walking home from school one day. Her long hair was as dark as raven's feathers, and it flowed out behind her as she walked. She was about 10 feet in front of me as I was making my way to my home. She seemed horribly bent and walked with a limp. I looked around and seeing no one else around, I watched as she continued to hobble ahead in her slow, painful gait. It seemed almost as though she was barefoot, walking on broken glass.
It's awful.
Though she walked slowly enough for me to pass her easily, all of my instincts were yelling at me to run in the opposite direction. We continued for a while, and I wasn't sure if she had noticed me yet. I was now only 4 blocks away from my home, and I was beginning to feel like I could make it. I picked up my pace slightly, getting closer to the woman. She was about 5 feet away now. Without warning, the woman stopped, realizing there was someone behind her. Slightly disturbed, I halted my pace, waiting to see what she would do. A horrid, grafting noise filled the air, and I found myself looking into a horribly disfigured face. Where the eyes would have been merely dark sockets, and her abba-blastered skin was stained with blood. She was also purpled with bruising.
The fuck?
Yeah. Her once white clothes and dark hair were stained with blood, grass, and grime. Gnarled arms that looked like they had never been used were twisted against her body, and her malnourished-looking legs were barely visible underneath her pale, flowing skirt. The horrible woman's mouth opened, and an utterly inhuman screech came from it. The thin lips parted into a round, unnaturally large eclipse. With a continued screech, the woman's hand reached out to touch my face. Paralyzed as I was, I could not stop it. The cold, twisted fingers brushed against my cheek and, moving downwards, tightened around my throat, gasping for air as I was lifted up and held in the air. With a cry that I could not hear, I fell backwards and hit my head on the ground. My vision filled with stars, and that's all I remember from then until I woke up in my bed and being told that my neighbors had found me passed out and brought me to my parents. They found the bruises on my neck and assumed someone had attempted to assault me. Though I had not seen the woman since that encounter, the screaming woman has haunted my dreams, bringing me nightmares for weeks now. I have not slept for ages, and all I can think about is the horrible scream she gave. If there is one piece of advice I can give to anyone reading this, it is that if you see a woman with black hair, a failing gait, and a dress that used to be white, you should run as fast as you can in the opposite direction.
You know what this sounds like to me?
What?
It almost sounds like a weird PSA to whenever it was talking about how the person was like walking right behind her and trying to like hurry catching up with her. Mm-hmm. I was like, ew, never do that to somebody when they're alone. Because, like, that's the creepiest shit.
True.
So, like, a creepypasta PSA to get people stopping weird when walking behind people.
Weird activities.
Yeah. Like, if you ever see a woman walking alone in general, just stay away.
Yeah. Big facts.
Big facts. No one likes it. All right. Well, that is going to be it from us this week. If anyone wants to reach out, you can email us at thespookyshit.pod@gmail.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are spookyshit_pod, and our website is spookyshit-pod.com. Thank you for listening, per huge.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll talk to y'all next week. Goodbye.
Bye.